time again for Truth About Markets with Max and Stacy on Resonance 104.4. Stacy, how's it going?
Hey, it's going pretty well. You know, recording this directly onto my MacBook Pro here. We're in St. Petersburg in Russia, not the one in Florida. We got quite a lot of people on Twitter saying, hey, I'm in St. Petersburg, Florida, too.
No, St. Petersburg, Russia, and I was part of the St. Petersburg International Economic Forum, and I was on a show talking about the European crisis, the global banking crisis, and hopefully that'll be up on YouTube. It was supposed to be maybe live, but no, this might be on YouTube, and that's interesting. One of the classic confrontations, me versus some banker stooge who was trying to defend the interests of the bankers, and then I rip into him, and then he storms off in a huff. So good time for all.
Yeah, well, you know, having traveled a little bit more now across Russia, it's amazing how much of the Soviet state is left. It's one of the most bureaucratic nightmare hellholes in terms of bureaucracy. I mean, it's worse than France, which I think is pretty bad.
Yeah, well, it's only 20 years ago. It was Soviet Union, thereabouts. And so the legacy of that still very much in place. So, yeah, France is like, it's a bureaucracy, yes. But here it's accompanied by, you know, military uniforms and big, big round hats and dozens and dozens of layers of bureaucracy. So everything is very heavily controlled. And there's still the attitude that everybody, you know, is a suspect in some grand conspiracy against the government powers. Now, Stacy, seeing how this is Resonance 104.4, Musicians Cooperative and whatnot, there's a big story here in Russia, isn't there, involving a punk rock group who is a big punk rock group, and they were very active. They were the best thing to happen in punk rock for years and years and years, but now they are, encountering some troubles.
Yeah, well, I don't even know if we're allowed to say their name, you know, with the whole Ofcom thing, everything is against the law, but it's the P Riot, we'll call. But, you know, they were part of the opposition, but they did something weird, which is they went up on the some church, big, well-known church. They interrupted an actual sermon, the services,
yeah.
And they climbed up on to the bit where no lay person is supposed to go. And I think, you know, a lot of people apparently take their whole religion thing very seriously. So from what I could tell in the newspapers, by the way, the newspapers here are very, combative, I would think. The ones written in English language, the local Moscow Times and then the local St. Petersburg Times, they're very openly anti the government, it would seem to me. And but this is where I got a lot of the information about this group, the P Riot. But apparently a lot of people are quite upset in terms of the blasphemy, which they call it, for them getting up on the pulpit and singing. They started singing some songs.
Oh, yeah, it's good stuff. You can check them up on YouTube. And it's a good all-girl punk group. They're in trouble with the law, which, of course, makes sense if you're a punk group, a genuine punk group.
You just realized you reminded me of the fact that of Outlaws.
Yeah.
And since we were last here on Resonance 104.4 FM in London, since we were on last, we were ranked number one most dangerous financial media in all of America. So what do you think of that? Number two was Zero Hedge. Number three was Terry Bull.
Mm-hmm. That's good news. Most dangerous financial media. We're dangerous, I guess, because we speak the truth about finances. And when you have a media, financial media, that is completely embedded in the banking system, anyone who speaks the truth about the financial system is considered dangerous. So, this has gotten a lot of interest around the blogosphere and media sphere. And we are happy to be ranked number one out of 25 names. And one name that was absent, which was Matt Taibbi. Now, he's got a really good piece out about the mafia comparison with some guys. Tell the people.
Well, Max, you remember in the good old days of the Italian mafia running many cities across America, as Elliot Spitzer put it in this Matt Taibbi article, they moved into the bid rigging game, controlling contracts, city and municipal contracts, because they realized that it was a much more profitable game, consistent income, and they didn't need to break so many legs. In fact, they didn't need to break any. They just needed to bribe the city councilor or somebody in politics a small fee. And they could, for example, overcharge the city then, i.e. the taxpayer, by, say, 10%, and they would make a guaranteed revenue stream. Well, the major banks, including GE Capital, JP Morgan, Goldman Sachs, UBS, Societe Generale, Goldman Sachs, Bank of America, they were engaged in bid rigging across America. And now this story has been going on for a while, but this there's been a trial of three guys who worked for GE Capital. And this trial recently ended, and Matt Taibbi is focusing on this story because a lot of information emerged from this trial. And it's pretty astounding. It's truly astounding. The tens of thousands of dollars from every single municipality, every single town, every single city across the entirety of the United States was being nickeled and dimed on a local level. It was a small scale, and say like a $220 million bond, they might be overcharged by, say, $60,000. But this happened from every single contract, had to go through this basically bid rigging process. None of them were done on an open competitive playing field. There were clearly the wiretaps that emerged. It's just amazing. I mean, it sounds exactly like the mafia. They were ripping off schools. They were ripping off hospitals. They were ripping off the taxpayers. And yet, we'll see. I just don't think the taxpayer cares so much. They care far more about some, you know, immigrant or some dark woman who is, you know, claims $50 too much a month for food stamps to feed her children.
Yeah, well, the defense that they used, I think that's very interesting because essentially the defense was, well, if we weren't ripping people off, there would be no market at all for these municipal bonds, and none of these hospitals and schools would get built. Now, this is very interesting because it shows that at the core of what's going on Wall Street is a certain contempt for the idea of a free market, whereas Matt Taibbi calls it a collision of information arrives on the exchange and a price discovery takes place. There's a, you know, what Adam Smith might call the invisible hand. So there's a certain anonymity and unpredictability to the way prices are established due to everybody trying to, you know, compete freely in the marketplace. But the defense by these bid riggers is that, well, you know, without us, there would be no market, as if there was no such thing as a free market, as if there was no such thing as an exchange. They don't recognize even that the existence of a free market. They only recognize, well, there's bid rigging, and then there's nothing. And this is very systemic. You know, you see this across the board. This is the same defense that Blankfein uses when he's testifying, or Jamie Dimon uses when he's testifying. This defense of, well, we are the market. Without us, there is no market. And this is horrible because to a certain degree, it shows how there's been a wholesale disregard for the idea that there can be a functioning market at all. that's operating in the greater good. There's only the rigged market. Rigged market capitalism has replaced free market capitalism, and these guys believe that they're, you know, as Blank Fine would say, doing God's work. That they are, without them, there's nothing. And nobody seems to call them on it. Now, this trial, of course, it ended up in convictions, and these guys face minimal jail terms and minimal security prison-type environments. But the end result is that the money is being siphoned off and drained from all these municipalities. So when schools are closing and hospitals are closing for lack of funding, and it is in large part because GE Capital and other Wall Street operators are draining the system of money. You know, high frequency trading is also a way to drain the system of money. Using credit default swaps is another way to drain the system of money. So you have an economy that's market driven, but a market that's losing all liquidity. And as an attempt to cover the inherent flaws, there's greater and greater arcane use of monetary policies and austerity measures, whereas all that really needs to be done is a return to free market capitalism. But that hasn't really been in place now for many, many years. And the band-aids being used to address the fact that free market capitalism is dead are becoming more central planning, more command and control, and a greater austerity measures and a greater reliance on the gulag state. You know, Zero Hedge, Stacey, had a great chart that showed the rise of the concentration of wealth in the top 1% is very similar to the rise, almost exactly similar to the rise in the prison population in America. So these two things go together like, you know, a hand in glove, and it's not by coincidence.
No, it's by design. And Rupert Murdoch, by the way, has a huge hand in it. You know, it fits in with this story that Matt Taibbi is showing, is that these elite bankers, the top 0.01%, they are there because they're defrauding you. They are ripping the towns and cities across America off. And yet it's the Rupert Murdoch sort of media that, you know, like, screeches at the highest decibels possible to the population, that it's that poor single mother, that she's a floozy, and look at her. She's collecting $130 a month in food stamps. She's a sponge. She's a drain on your wealth. And yet, you know, it's dwarfed by the theft from the top. And yet people are like, their anger is diverted to the poor people below them, and they're convinced it works to the benefit of all, because of course then they need to raise a new bond to build a new prison to incarcerate those single mothers and separate them from their children and put their children in an orphanage or state care while their mother is in prison for $50 and stolen food stamps.
Mm. Yeah, and also Matt Taibbi he makes a good point that Wall Street looked at government and saw something that they liked. They saw the government's ability to tax, to collect taxes. They're not, you know, the government doesn't compete for that money. It just takes the money. And this is what Wall Street doesn't want to compete for business. They all collude. They are working together in this racket to divvy up all the muni bond business amongst themselves in a way that is non-competitive. They don't want to compete, but it operates as a stealth tax. It's just another layer of tax. So you're paying state, federal, local, and Wall Street tax. And that's why, and you can see on Wall Street, the bonuses are very predictable. They're rising now for 10 years in a row, basically. They keep going higher, even though the economy is crashing and markets are extremely volatile. Well, you know, these guys don't take risks. They're not exposed to market risk. They're not competing in the market. They're simply, they've imposed a layer of technology and corruption that taxes these markets, and they pick up that tax. So, you know, again, these libertarians who scream about they need to be deregulated and get government out of the way are the same people that are mimicking the government by simply taxing people to death using fraud. You know, they would love to be government. You know, inside every libertarian is a communist hoping to get free.
Now, every single moment of the process was rigged, and there were outright briberies involved in this, of officials like Governor Bill Richardson, who apparently received $100,000 from a company called CDR. These are brokers. So the law is in America that municipalities, if they raise money, say, to build an elementary school, and they need $500 million, what they do is, you know, Wall Street raises this $500 million in a bond for them, but they don't spend it all at once, so they have to deposit it. And by law, they have to tender it out to at least three bidders. So what would happen, how this rigging happened, is so that to deposit that money in one of these bank accounts, you know, whoever offered the highest interest rate would win. That was a simple metric of who got the business. But the three banks were approached by the broker. They had to use a broker to handle the auction process. So the broker is the one that would call UBS, call JP Morgan, call Goldman Sachs and say, okay, this business is going to go to Goldman Sachs. And so JP Morgan, you offer 4%. UBS, you offer 4.1%. And so Goldman Sachs offer 4.2%. And it was pretty much that open. They told them what to offer to win the business and what interest rates to charge. Now, the deal would go to that broker. The rigging for the deal would happen by CDR gave, for example, $100,000 to Bill Richardson in his campaign as governor. As governor of New Mexico. And in exchange, he gave them $1.5 million in taxpayer fees on actually business that they didn't end up having to actually do, that New Mexico had to hire another company to handle. So it was always kind of like this, that the mayor of Philadelphia or something like that, he received $10,000 from them and in exchange gave them $150,000 as a fee back. So it was pretty remarkable how little money they have to give our public servants in exchange for a huge amount of business.
Yeah, the corruption is pretty cheap in America. You can buy a politician for pretty cheap. You know, $100,000 gets you, you know, a lobbying in Washington worth hundreds of millions of dollars in fees and bonuses and salaries. And, I'd like to see our politicians in America hold out for a little bit higher. You know, they would have a trickle-down effect. I mean, if some of these congressmen held out for bigger bribes, you know, they would be out there spending more and it would trickle down somewhat. But they can be bought off so cheaply. It has both an insulting and non-multiplying effect in the economy. You know, Barack Obama loved to talk about the multiplying effect of bailing out banks versus bailing out individuals because of the fractional reserve banking system and the way money is circulating in the system. Of course, that never happened. But maybe there is a multiplying effect if congressmen would hold out for bigger bribes. You know, they would hire more hookers and they'd get more money in the strip clubs, which trickles down to dishwashers and cooks and, you know, people like that, dancers.
Well, so, for example, J.P. Morgan settled with the SEC for $367 million. But they didn't have to admit guilt in this bid rigging. And so they're still doing business. In fact, they're the number two in the U.S. in the amount, maybe perhaps number one, in the amount of business they've done in the last year. And Connecticut also just assigned to J.P. Morgan the business of collecting, of actually dispensing tax returns. Which is a huge deal. It's a huge amount of business. We don't know what sort of bribes had to happen there and where that's going to go. But, you know, you were talking about they want to collect taxes. That, I guess that's the next step. Right now, they're just dispensing the tax returns, the money given back. But essentially, they get to keep a lot of extra money on these tax returns if you don't spend it. And remarkably, a lot of people actually don't spend their tax returns, don't cash it, because they don't have a bank account. They don't have enough money to even deposit the check because it's only like $10, $20. But, you know, it's only $10 or $20 to that individual, but it goes, you know, there's hundreds of thousands of them that don't collect it, don't cash that, so JP Morgan gets to keep it.
Yeah, all these scams, they all come down to skimming in one way or another.
Yeah.
You know, a few pennies here, a few pennies there, but multiplied over 100,000s and millions of transactions. And it's the same way in the Forex scandal Bank of New York, also their scandal when they were they're entrusting trillions of dollars worth of custodial funds, and every foreign exchange transaction, they would steal a few pennies. It added up to $300 billion in fraud. This latest Forex scandal, that $3 trillion market that the brokers were scamming a few pennies here and a few pennies there. So the one reason why you have a $600 trillion derivatives market is because you need that size market to scam the pennies that add up to the millions and hundreds of millions, so that it's very difficult to pick up on the scam pennies on a $600 trillion market. That's why it is $600 trillion, because you need it that big to hide the pennies that are being siphoned off. If it were the size of what would needed to run a global economy, not a $600 trillion derivative market, but maybe a $20 trillion derivative market, then it would be impossible to put these types of frauds on, because as a percentage of transaction, the money being stolen would show up quite glaringly at the end of the quarter. But since it's 50 to 60 times bigger than any reasonable need for these types of instruments, the theft goes unnoticed. And they believe, as was the defense of these criminals, that there is no alternative. You know, to use Margaret Thatcher's phrase, there is no alternative. It's either the fraud or nothing. And so this, you know, would send the chill down the spine of anyone who thinks that they're involved in free markets or believes in free markets. That's just not what we have here. We have rigged markets perpetrated by fraudsters and, you know, mobsters that are rigging bids and stealing money. And they get no punishment other than the occasional token gesture of a fine without having to admit guilt, a minimal jail term at a club Fed. other than that, it's just wholesale thievery and fraud. And the economy, unfortunately, you know, during the years where it produced house inflation, people looked the other way because their houses were going up in value due to the fraud, injection of trillions. But that reversed itself, and now people have negative equity in their homes, and they're losing their jobs and their health benefits and their health care and their access to food. You know, and people are dying, and they're dying in countries like Greece and around the world because of all these things flowing in reverse. But of course, the criminals, they never have suffered even one down day. You know, these banks last year, there's those stories about how JP Morgan and Goldman Sachs were reporting 30, 60, 90 days in a row of perfect trading track records without a single down day. Now, that's like, you know, flipping a coin and having it come up heads for 90 times in a row. That is very statistically improbable, to say the least. And yet nobody questions this out there. They ask the questions, but nobody bothers to pursue how that can continue to be such a blatant, open fraud, which results in huge transfer of wealth to the kleptocracy, to the absolute worst among us.
Well, this reminds me of a story when I was living in Los Angeles, and there was a clerk working at one of the Beverly Hills branches of, I think it was Bank of America, and he was stealing one or two pennies a month from various clients with deposits there. And then, but he was doing it for years, and making quite a good amount of money from it. But he got greedy, and he started to steal 5 cents a month. But sure enough, it was 80, 90 year old women who noticed the 5 cents missing.
Mm-hmm.
And enough of these old ladies mentioned it to the manager of the bank that they were missing 5 cents from their account. And then they tracked this guy and caught him. But of course, he was sentenced to a very, very long prison sentence for stealing these pennies from these old ladies. And why not these bankers? Why? How is it that J.P. Morgan gets to say, we're not going to admit to guilt, but we're going to pay, you know, this $360 million fine just because we're good guys? It's like bringing the chicken around, right, to the neighborhood and feeding everybody.
Yeah, that's right. Like the heroin dealers used to do up in Harlem. And their attitude is they're just throwing some bones to the chattering classes, and they're really it's just a you know, a gesture on their part of largesse, and without them there is no market. And you know, it's funny because when I was running Hollywood Stock Exchange in Los Angeles, you know, people would be outraged if they were missing virtual pennies from their portfolio, because in a gaming environment they felt as though the rules had to be adhered to. But in the real world environment of Bank of America and Citigroup, people assume that the banks are going to break the law and break the rules, and they don't pursue when they notice money's missing from their account because they just believe that, well, they're banks. The banks don't obey the law. But in a gaming situation, their standard for law adherence and rule adherence is higher, which I thought was very interesting, that people felt, you know, that games had to be much more, you know, stringent in terms of following the rules than in real life.
Well, you know, Matt Taibbi in this piece about the mafia racket going on in America, which these big banks operate, he did mention the one happening in London, the LIBOR rigging. And, you know, the word on that, of course, is that nothing will happen because essentially the fraud is just so massive that there's no way to determine who's been defrauded. It's, you know, the LIBOR sets the global interest rates, essentially, on all adjustable rate mortgages, credit cards, everything. And so it's hard to quantify how much there's been because it's $3 trillion a year that this market, you know, it's a $3 trillion a year market. So, you know, the scale of this global fraud, this scooping out of money, you could probably trace exactly to this growth of the 1%, the top 1% of the 1%. And the destabilization of the global economy, because what you're seeing is perhaps like this clerk, the Clark in at Bank of America in Beverly Hills, you know, 15, 20 years ago, perhaps, you know, the bankers were first stealing a few pennies, a fraction of a penny here and there. And then their scams are getting bigger and bigger as the prince class is getting bigger and greedier. And this is what's caused the global financial collapse.
Yeah, well, I mean, we saw an example of how the scams have gotten huge with the Facebook IPO. I mean, here's a Ponzi scheme, or Groupon is a Ponzi scheme, or Zynga is a Ponzi scheme on the markets. Typically, you know, 20 years ago, this type of pump and dump scam would have been exclusively in the penny stock world and deep in the bowels of Wall Street at firms like D.H. Blair, or what are, you know, known as bucket shops, where they'll take a company public for $5 million and it'll be a pump and dump scam and the insiders will cash out for $1 million. But with this IPO of companies like Facebook, Groupon, and Zynga, it's a pump and dump scam where the insiders are cashing out for billions of dollars. But again, because there's no checks and balances, there's no rules and regulations. There's no adherence to any of the securities laws that were put in place after the crash of 29 anymore. So that's just an escalation of what was once a small, you know, scam on the fringes has become mainstream.
Well, hopefully one day the population will care about it. But, you know, I mean, you can see this everywhere you look is these sort of frauds perpetrated on the population. We see that with Greece, with the Goldman Sachs credit default swap deals. And, you know, Bloomberg News is trying to force the ECB to release documents which would prove that the ECB and the EU leaders knew of this deal and knew that debt was being hidden. And therefore, all of this debt is odious. All of this Greek debt is odious because they knew it was, it's like predatory lending. They knew that Greece was not able to exist in the Eurozone, that they couldn't exist with the Euro and that this crisis would happen. But they all hid it and they all looked the other way because everybody, this is how these bid rigging scandals happen. Everybody, some guy was making 10,000 bucks. And because of that $10,000 or francs or euros or Deutschmark, you know, everybody in the world, look at the suffering that happens as a, you know, the compounded interest and the compounded fraud 10 years later, 15 years later, it becomes a disaster.
Yeah, and it's like this guy on the panel for this RT show that I did with Peter Lavelle on the European banking scandal. I brought up the Greek debt hiding that was done and how this was part of a systemic failure to regulate fraud. And his argument back was, it's true that there was fraud, that they did hide debt, but there was already debt to begin with. So, you know, once again, you have this argument, without us, there is no market. You know, the point, of course, being that the debts that were there in place ahead of time were also fraudulently induced and fraudulently put in place. But everyone is a virgin fraudster. Every fraud that comes down the pike happened just now for the first time. Even though J.P. Morgan has committed a series of frauds that they've had to pay massive, you know, not massive, but penalties on without admitting guilt. The same thing for every major firm on Wall Street in the City of London. Every time, like Jamie Dimon goes to Congress about a $2 billion loss, it's always, oh, wow, this is the first time this has ever happened, and we never saw it coming, and it'll never happen again. 3 months later, oh, another thing, it just happened for the very first time. We have no idea how it happened. Nobody saw it coming. It'll never happen again. And the memories, you know, you think, I guess these Congress people or the politicians in London, that they have the memories of a squirrel. You know, a squirrel's memory lasts about 3 minutes. You know, this is as long as they can remember where they hid their nuts. So they are constantly losing their nuts. You know, people have this image of squirrels burying their nuts and finding them later. And when that's not true. They forget where they hide their nuts in 3 minutes. They end up digging each other's nuts, and that's how they survive. But it's the same thing with these congressmen and these people and the politicians in London. They don't remember even 3 minutes ago that they just got hoodwinked by a bunch of mobsters, and they just came out of the cabbage patch 30 seconds ago, born into this world with a complete slate of clean brain, not a single memory in their brain. And they put down that fake shocked look on their face like, wow, what a shocker. And the public, unfortunately, during the real estate, of course, mania, they looked the other way because they thought they were getting rich. But now that they've all lost all of their equity in their homes, they're not sure what to do, because if they really press the politicians, they'll lose their home outright because they'll have to raise interest rates to get rid of the excess, which means you'll be homeless. Or B, you just hope that the good times come again. But unfortunately, we've hit that Minsky moment where there is no reinflation of the bubble. There is no Humpty Dumpty will not be put back together again. And the slippery slide down toward global debt forgiveness and debt collapse is baked into the cake. There's no going back. So you're going to lose your house anyway. So the question is, are you going to quietly lose your house, or are you going to, you know, make a little noise?
Well, you know, I think it's still quietly because the casino's still open. You've called it a casino gulag state, and you're either in the gulag, you're either in the prison, or you're outside and hoping desperately to get in on the next fraud before it all pops. I mean, this seems to be what we do, is we go from Ponzi scheme to Ponzi scheme, from tech bubble to housing collapse to housing bubble and then collapse. And everybody's just chasing, hoping to get in on the next scam. We're all day traders, which is just like being part of the casino gulag. And people seem happy with that because, you know, extracting equity from your house and traveling around. I mean, most of my friends, I've told you this before, most of my friends in the UK, it was a very unique place. I didn't, you know, I've never had, when I lived in Los Angeles or all my friends in New York, everybody actually has to work for a living. You know, they might have kind of easy jobs because it's just like in the film industry and stuff like that. But they still have to go spend all their day in an office. None of my friends, very few of my friends in the UK ever actually worked in the, you know, 11, 12 years I lived here. They all just extracted equity from their house and they got to travel more than I did. And I was this schlub working and, you know, and they were buying all sorts of new clothes, cars, all sorts of stuff. But it was all just like taken from their house. It did, after about 10 years of watching my friends do this, I did think I was doing something wrong and they were obviously doing something right, that they just, that it was like a magical ATM.
Right. And so people are stuck. They know that if they press for the indictment and prosecution of the fraudsters on Wall Street in the City of London, the system will break and interest rates will skyrocket and they'll lose their homes. Or B, they can hope for a new inflationary wave to appear that will bail everybody out, including themselves, bring their house prices back so no longer negative equity, and they can start borrowing against their home again. But the cycle of the debt, which took 30 years to build up, you know, which started in earnest under Reagan Thatcher, which popped in 2007, is still accelerating on the downside. And no quantitative easing by Mervyn King or Ben Bernanke has stemmed the deflationary collapse of the asset of the bond markets around the world. And people will point to, oh, what are you talking about deflation? Look at the price of education, or look at the price of healthcare. Those are pockets of relative strength, but even those prices are deflating against gold and silver. So there is nothing, no price of anything over the past 10 years has outpaced silver. That's for darn sure, because silver's up 800% in price. So even though healthcare may have doubled in price, or the cost of education may have doubled in price, it's not 800%, which is what silver has done. So everything is deflating against gold and silver because of this deflationary collapse, which is still very much with us, and is not going to end, because there's no policies that can possibly stop it. There's $600 trillion worth of debt. There's no, you know, unless, you know, the Federal Reserve and the Bank of England, the Bank of Japan and the ECB and every central bank in the world would have to sit down and say, okay, we need $600 trillion worth of money printing to offset this deflationary collapse. Now, every single paper currency in the world will immediately go to zero, this is where we're heading. You know, it's either heading fast, not so fast, or very fast, or maybe not, a little in between, but there's no escaping this. This is what's happening. So and the policymakers just keep believing that they're going to somehow bring back inflation, but you can't bring back, you know, once you're in a black hole, You can't wish your way out of it. You're in it. That's it.
Wish upon a star.
Wish
upon a black hole. Yeah. Well, a black hole is a dead star, isn't it? Now, honey.
Yeah.
Remember I brought up this notion of the shortchange debt con?
Yeah.
Where debt and debt facilities were being created and exchanged so fast that it's a way to, you know, in all of that chaos of all of these various instruments and facilities being born and introduced, somebody's being defrauded. Well, I think, you know, literally I was unable to read the news on Thursday and Friday because there were so many different announcements going on simultaneously and so many different meetings. They're, you know, they were meeting in Luxembourg, these, the finance ministers and the heads of state of the big four in Rome, and all these various new deals and bailouts and facilities and debt swaps and all sorts of stuff were being introduced at the same time over and over. And the IMF and Lagarde was, you know, putting her mouth into it. And it was so many different deals. I really couldn't figure out what was going on. And this is what I do for a living. I look at these things, but I couldn't, there were so many of them spouted in all the newspapers and on CNBC and Bloomberg and BBC World, watching these in the news, in the room. And I just, you know, I thought something, there's, somebody's losing a lot of money right now. Somebody's being conned out of a lot of money.
Well, the, here's what's going on. We have to refer back to Currency Wars, you know, that Jim Rickards book, which has so far been right on the money. So what's happening in the Eurozone and around the world, all of the intermediate term funding facilities are drying up. Banks are still collapsing. You still have an insolvency crisis. So they're going to bring out the special drawing right, which is the currency printed by the IMF, which will be brought out as a global reserve bank to kind of take precedence over the ECB and the Federal Reserve Bank. And they're going to re-securitize hundreds of trillions of dollars worth of toxic paper as in SDRs. And it's going to be now going to be floated by the IMF. And this will be an attempt to kick the can down the road again. And it probably will kick the can down the road again. It will keep the wolf at the door. And gold and silver will continue their bull markets. And it will end in tears. That once again, they'll run out of runway for the jumbo jet of debt that's landing, and it'll all, you know, we're heading back to this crash. But there is, as many have said, including myself, the timing is not this week. The timing will probably be in the next 18 months because of this new special drawing right global currency that will be floated, hundreds of trillions of dollars worth of them, to re-securitize all the bad securities right now and make 100 and 150 year maturity dates on a mortgage-backed security that if has a zero value today. But instead of having to admit today, because it's due today, that it's not worth 100 cents on the dollar, but it's actually worth 1 cent on the dollar, they'll say, you know what, we're going to re-securitize these, not in euros or dollars, but in special drawing rights, and the maturity date is not today, but 150 years from today. And for 150 years, the bank will be able to carry that security on its books at 100 cents on the dollar, and therefore the bank is solvent. And the only problem with the bank is that it's illiquid. So by re-securitizing all this bad debt, we can save its solvency by increasing its liquidity. And the game goes on for another phase. This will bring in more global governance. It'll bring in more tension. It'll bring in more war. It'll bring in more problems. Hey, what do you think about the Julian Assange story?
Oh, well, it's interesting. I'll get to that in a moment because I wanted to also bring up that you were interviewed live from St. Petersburg, the forum. You were interviewed from there about the banks and all these bank deals. And, you know, now they're saying that the Spanish banks need 62 billion euros of direct capitalization. And then they'll all be fine. This is the write down on all of that real estate bubble deal fraud. And, you know, at the end of the day, by the way, you know, you hear all the time screeches from the population saying, no debt jubilee because it's moral hazard for my neighbor. They're more concerned about their neighbor. You know, I didn't buy my house. I rented. I was sensible. And I don't want him to get away with it. But at the end of the day, look, 62 billion euros is being taken from you and given to the banks. If it makes you happier that the bankers get the money instead, well, that's what's happened. But You called it that the banks are dead, and that all of these facilities and all of these rescues and all of these bailouts are just spraying Lysol. But the fact is, there's still maggots and flies and stink, and the corpses are there. They're rotting up the joint.
Right. Well, you know, speaking of bank bailouts, Osborne just bailed out the banks again in the UK.
That's right.
What did he give them? £50 billion, I think.
Whatever.
As part of a program that to stimulate the economy. I mean, the way they positioned it was, this will help the economy. We're going to give the banks £50 billion to help the economy. That's a bank bailout again, on top of the other bank bailouts, which are continuing because the banks are dead. You're giving blood transfusions of cash to a corpse. And you're wondering, well, why doesn't the bank start to loan again? Why is the economy still moribund? Why doesn't it work? We keep transfusing all the cash into the dead bank. Why come it's not jumping up from the table and doing the mambo? Because the bank is dead. It's a zombie bank, just like the Japanese banks have been dead for 20 years. That zombie bank phenomenon is now become global. But to recognize this would mean writing down the balance sheets from 100 cents on the dollar for these bonds to zero, which means, you know, you'd have to enter a new post-banking crisis world. The crisis would be over, and we'd be post-crisis, just like when Iceland wrote the debts down to zero, they'd be started again. They were in the post-crisis. When Russia devalued in 2000, they entered the period of post-crisis. When Argentina devalued, it entered the period of post-crisis. But and so until that happens, until there's that write-down of all the bad debts, we are going to be pre-post-crisis. We're going to be in the crisis. This is the crisis. It's still going on. And it'll continue on until there's a recognition that these debts are worth zero. They're not worth 100 cents on the dollar. So we won't be in the post-crisis until that moment comes. Meanwhile, all the austerity measures that are being imposed are cruel. It's just sadistic to force people into starvation and death because somebody at the bank doesn't want to be embarrassed by having to reveal the fact that they've been carrying debts on their books for 100 cents on the dollar when they're really worthless. My God, what will they say at the club? What will the family say at the Ascot Festival this year? Will his wife be able to afford a funny hat? Oh my God, I can't take the indignity of it. So you're going to let people starve to death instead. I mean, this is just like the medieval days. I mean, you know, the king, you know, fancied some queen or had an affair and they didn't want to expose it, so they went to war and people died. It's very, very similar.
That's right. So you asked about Julian Assange. He sought asylum in the Ecuador embassy. Now, bizarrely, I've read headlines from both stating legal experts say this is a good thing for him to do. He'll be able to get out of the country and go to Ecuador if he's granted asylum. Others say there's no way. Even if he's granted asylum, legal experts say he'll still be arrested as soon as he steps out of the place. So, you know, experts say there's an expert to tell you both sides of the equation, it appears, for most things. You know, drinking red wine's good for you. Drinking red wine's bad for you. Eating butter is good for you. Eating butter's bad for you.
I also heard that there's a third possibility, that he's in a legal quagmire and that he could just be there for years.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the options as well. So I would say he's probably put this guy Correa in a very difficult position because, you know, it's one thing to be, you know, try to maintain your sovereignty in an imperial world. You know, there is only one empire, and that is the United States Empire. And you can't stand up to that empire too much without suffering serious consequences. And he will know that. I mean, he was able to get that U.S. base out of the country. And the U.S. has so far, you know, kind of tolerated that. But not really, because there was an attempted coup, right? They held him hostage for a while. So I would think that he's probably into life preservation. I'm sure John Perkins would tell you that his, you know, his decision right now is either be thrown out of a plane or, you know, don't grant Julian Assange asylum. Because, you know, everybody has noted that the interview between Julian Assange and Correa was that the last thing that Assange said is, don't get assassinated.
Yeah, right. Well, that's interesting. You know, John Perkins, of course, I'm curious what he would say about all this. And the Ecuadorians successfully got the U.S. military out of Ecuador. And they made a big position out of challenging the U.S. empire. So has Julian Assange. Now, Julian Assange is in the embassy in the U.K., in London, seeking political asylum. So the Carrera, if he doesn't give him asylum, then a lot of his rhetoric will seem empty because he's made a big name for himself taking on the empire. If he doesn't take Assange, it'll appear as though he has been bought off. If he does take Assange, then he would definitely, you know, be put more at risk.
Yes. So, I mean, I don't know. Does he have kids and stuff like that? You know, he will be thrown out of a plane or somehow lose a lot if he offers the asylum. So I'm sure they're trying to figure a way to do this that maintains their, you know, profile in a positive light as best possible by denying him the asylum. So, but that'll be interesting if it's a big nothing burger, by the way, that if Julian Assange is not given asylum, he has to leave the embassy and he's sent straight away to Sweden. Then the Swedish trial happens and, you know, nothing happens. He's not sent to the U.S. You know, it's a big drama thing, a drama queen over nothing.
Well, but, you know, I mean, the Swedish thing was a setup. So they were enticed into setting him up. So clearly there was somebody is after Assange. So I doubt that he'll just be, you know, go to trial and won't be extradited. He will be extradited because that's what the point of the setup was.
Well, with that, that's this end of this episode of The Truth About Markets, coming to you from St. Petersburg, Russia. We've been recording the show on to the MacBook Pro and to the computer. So if the audio wasn't as good as our usual standards, we're very sorry.
Yeah. Till next time. Bye, y'all.